Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to my podcast, Introverted Queen. On today's episode, I am speaking with Casey. He is a Black Canadian dad blogger who shares his fatherhood journey with the world. We talked about being a Black father and a content creator, and he also shared a setback that he's had. It's a great conversation. Check it out. Hi, Casey.
Hey, Sid, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I think I'm okay. That's a question for the last 2 years that I keep asking myself all the time, and I never have a clear answer.
Right? We're still wondering.
It's like you wake up every morning, you're like, ooh, is it an existential crisis day, or is it just a day ending in Y? I don't know.
Yes, but thank you for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm, people won't know from listening to this, but it's been a heck of a day, week, month. What is time even anyway? So I appreciate you accommodating my wackiness.
Sounds good. So how would you describe young Casey?
How young?
Like 7, 8.
Okay. So around the age my eldest kid is right now, which is his own separate topic altogether. Young Casey was a very curious kid. He had a thirst for knowledge and was always feeding it with any book you could get his hands on. It was a different time where video games didn't capture your mind for 24 hours of the day. Even though he had a nice little Nintendo, you know, he was given very strict rules on when he could use it. So he spent more of his time with nose in the books and taking his bike out to different places, whether it was a creek or a forest or whatever, and just reading for hours on end because parents back then didn't worry where you were for hours, and unless they enjoyed their free time and not having kids in the environment and just be like, go out there and don't die. And that is what I did for several years, not die.
It's so true. There was like an innocence about just taking your bike and just going wherever. Like there was this freedom and your parents didn't worry. Like it was the neighborhood, whatever.
Yeah, so you can only go so far. Like your legs are only so big as a kid, right? You're not going to carry yourself like, you know, to the next town over. You can only go so far before you're like, I need to take a rest. Yes. So they were really good with just like, I know what's in the area. Go out on an adventure and then come back when you're done by dinner time.
Yeah. I miss that. So you are a Black father. What are some, if any, struggles that you've had to deal with?
I like the if any there because
I had to put that in because I'm like, what if he didn't have any?
Yo, no, like daily struggles. You know what? That's a good segue from what I was giving on my last answer. So now that my kids are 8 and 6, what I'm really appreciating is that they're at an age where I can remember what I was like at 8 and 6. And now I'm trying to reframe my expectations based on one. Okay, I know, you know, what might be, let's say, appropriate for a kid that age. And also the fact that they're not me and I'm not them. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's a very different experience from that standpoint where I have to think, okay, it's almost like a step-by-step process where step one is like, okay, what would a kid this age do? And then step two is a layer of like, okay, who are you in this? And step three is, okay, how do I deal with this now that I've factored those two things in? And so my eldest son, he's 8, and he's very much more like his mom, which in some ways is really good because he's very warm and affectionate and all that kind of stuff. Whereas, you know, I'm nearly 40 and really impacted by strict Jamaican upbringing. So right, he wants to come in for cuddles. He wants cuddles all the time. Oh, and I'm just like, I have a limit. I have a threshold where I'm just like, it's been like 3 minutes. Your like face is in my face.
Right.
And you just want all the warmth and everything. You're like, can you please go to mom? Like I'm giving you what I have to offer at this moment.
Right.
Whereas the younger one is more like me and he's just kind of like, leave him alone for hours on end with a book or whatever. And he's good. He's straight. And then that's more my lane where it's like he's learning about all the things I'm all about and he's really in that mental space. And so we spend time just kind of talking about my hobbies and the things I've done over the years. And I'm trying to figure out how to balance those between the two kids. But specifically to being a Black dad, the struggle is how do I not use that to paint a picture of who they are? You know, right now we live in, you know, there's diversity in Toronto, but we live in a pretty white neighborhood. I won't lie. And they just see themselves as who they are. Like their friends, their colors don't matter. I'm the outlier. They look at me and like, you're the weirdo living in this neighborhood who doesn't look like anyone else. And I'm like, thanks, boy. You are amazing human beings. I appreciate it. But because of that, like, I don't want to impose it upon them that, you know, the things that come from my background, the background of our culture and everything has total relevance to who they are and their mm-hmm. identity, but I'm not ready yet to like shatter that veneer for them. I'm still waiting to figure out the best way to weave it in. I'm doing it bit by bit, and it's not something we turn a blind eye to, but I don't want it to define their experience. I want it to inform it. And that's the thing I'm always trying to figure out how to navigate around.
Mm. Do you feel that there's a certain age that you should talk to your kids about racism? Because I know yes. I've had conversation with friends and they're like, oh, some of them are like, oh, it's too young. But then I'm like, they might already experience it. So it's kind of like, it's a little weird.
The world won't wait though, right? Right. The world will not wait. You need to be ready to have age-appropriate discussions with your kids on racism from the day they're born, just in case. Like, we've been fortunate in that they haven't encountered too much. But I always have it like in the back pocket, ready to go at any time where it's like, okay, today's the day we're going to talk about X. And there have been elements of it where, you know, they have to have a certain degree of comfort with the idea of there are different people and they'll have different viewpoints from different cultural experiences, et cetera. But it comes down to making sure that they're aware eventually. You have to have that hard conversation. I feel like it's like 10 is kind of my number right now. Mm-hmm. Those double digit ages. And you're like, okay, like, you're not as much of a kid anymore. Like, let's have some real conversations. Until then, I'm trying to let them just be them without having that. But as soon as, I think in Toronto anyway, the best way I would say is that as soon as they're old enough to go somewhere by subway and they're able to go to different parts of town outside of your bubble, that's when. That part right there was just kind of like, you're in a totally different neighborhood. The rules are different because, you know, you're in a different cultural setting. So you need to make sure that they're armed with the knowledge that will keep them safe, really, whenever they go anywhere. So, yeah, 10's my number right now, but that could change.
Mm, I like that. So as a parent, how do you measure success? Or is that, can you even measure it?
Like success for my kids or success for me? Like what kind of success? There's so many different kinds.
Like how do you measure success as a parent? Like, okay, you know, I did a good job. Like,
oof. Oh, that's a good question. Now that's changed a lot over time too. Because like day one when they were born, it was like, if I know my kid's become an astronaut and has saved the world and is amazing as a human being and is a humanitarian and gets like 7 Pulitzers, I've done my job. And then you start to understand who your kid is. You're like, yo, they ate today. All right. We doing okay. Like, it's honestly, if they can live lives where they're self-sufficient and have some degree of happiness and they are able to, you know, they don't suffer from that failure to launch. They're able to get out of the nest and live lives on their own terms that I've helped them to foster. That's my job, basically, helping them be their best selves. And that is going to have, you know, times of happiness where we can celebrate together. There's going to be some very hard lessons that I've already taught them and will continue to teach them. But these are all part and parcel of making sure that they can just, you know, get ready to be the best adults they can be. And I feel that has a lot more to do with understanding who they are and what they need from the world and what they can give back to the world than it is about how the world sees them. That's something outside of our control. That's something outside of their control. But they can at least make sure that they wake up each day happy or as happy as possible.
Mm-hmm. I like that because I think sometimes, like, I'm not a parent yet. I'm just talking about like my experience. But I feel like sometimes parents can measure success as, you know, degrees. How many degrees did my child have? But then you don't really realize success is, you know, when your kid has their mental health is really good, or, you know, they're kind, or, you know, they're doing something for the world instead of just, you know, look at all my degrees.
Yep. So, I mean, going back to the comparison between myself and my kid, when I was 8, I was competing in spelling bees at a provincial level because I was just that kind of kid. I have trophies at home from spelling bees because I was just like a precocious child. And then when my kid was kind of like learning how to spell and trying to figure it out, I was like frustrated at first because I'm like, you have my genes. What's going on here? My wife is like, no. This is what a normal 8-year-old is like. Chill. I was like, So I had to temper those expectations because that's not what's going to make him happy and ultimately myself happy. Having a child frustrated because they don't live up to the expectation of having, I guess, another Casey Palmer, if you will, is that's not healthy for anybody. They're not me. And I have to continually tell myself this all the time. But then there's also moments where they're just like me, like the 6-year-old is bored by school because the curriculum asks him to be able to count from 1 to 30. And he can multiply by 2s up to 4,096 without a problem. And so he's just like, why am I having to go to this place that makes me do nothing useful all day? And I'm like, I have no good answers for that. you know, in grade one, we could start looking at, like, you know, if we can get you some more exposure to other things. But kindergarten is kind of it's a wash. So right. Just survive. Yeah. Make it to June.
So you're a content creator. And I love your content, by the way, because it's not something that I see, like, people openly talking about fatherhood. Mm-hmm. Why did you decide to do that?
I almost didn't.
Really?
I almost didn't. Oh, my gosh. So I created my first website in, like, 98, and I've been journaling online since 2002. And I used to have a webcomic, all this other stuff that I've dabbled in over the years. And I was just always kind of just like messing around on the internet. That's literally how I would categorize it. I was just there on the computer at all times, meeting friends and making all sorts of stuff. And that was a good decade of just like, I'm just going to try things. And then Twitter came around, good old Twitter. And it took over everything for a while, like from 2010 to about 2013 when our first kid was born. Like, it would be 5-6 days of tweet ups a week going out to all these events and parties and meeting people and finding who your friends are. And, you know, you really figure out who you are in any social circle or any social context that you're in. So Twitter was the jam for a while, and that's brought on the blog. And I was just like Casey Palmer, this guy going around to events and doing all sorts of stuff. My wife hated it for a good time because she's like, you're never home. Like, get your butt home. I'm like, okay, all right, fair enough. So I'm still married, by the way. I don't know how we survived that. Anyway, so I was doing all this stuff for a while and being really social. And then we were going to have a kid. And I was like, maybe I should stop with all this social media madness. Like, I have to be a dad and be home and, you know, still had a full-time job at the time and everything. And a friend of mine sat me down. He's like, you need to realize, though, no one else in Canada is really going into fatherhood content, like, as a strong brand right now. And you have a lot of prior experience already from content creation. So instead of it being something where you're starting out, you know, from scratch, when you just, you know, a lot of parent creators I've seen start out right when the kid's born, mm-hmm. they start their blog and they're like, here's my parenting journey. You're learning the process while you're raising your kid. Whereas with all these years of experience behind me, it was basically like, okay, let's plop fatherhood into my existing brand and see how it grows. And then it exploded. Like, the last 8 years it's now so woven into my DNA that I can't imagine being me without the brand. Mm. It's something where I'm so used to expressing myself or having that outlet. So that when you ask me parenting questions, I've dove into this stuff so much because it's just been such an outlet for just going through all my experiences over the years. And now I have sessions where I talk with other dads. I've done a lot of public speaking about it. And now it's just an important space to be able to talk about something that very few people choose to talk about. And I take that as something that I have to take seriously. So I keep at it.
Mm-hmm. And I like that because there's tons of mommy blogs out there, like tons. Mm-hmm. But father blogs, it's like, So I like that you probably created a community of fathers. Do you see that there was a need for it, like, to build that community?
Yeah. One of the things that people don't realize about dads is that it's a very lonely enterprise at first. You know, when you first have a kid, there's a lot of supports for moms and, you know, which is much needed. You've just gotten this human being out of your body. You are a wreck physically and emotionally and all the things. And so seeing all the supports that my wife got, for example, both times was amazing because I don't think we would have gotten through those first days of having a kid without it. But at the same time, you have dads for the most part, like, you're plunged into a world that you're ill prepared for. And, like, there's a saying that a woman becomes a mom as soon as she's pregnant and you're carrying the baby because your body goes through the changes, you start preparing, all that sort of stuff. And a man becomes a dad the first time he holds a kid, which, you know, it's oversimplification, but there's a lot of truth to it. Like, the first time I held my kid, I was like, oh, what the hell? Like, okay, we're in this now. This is real. Like, it's not something you can push off. Like, I was doing take care of my to-do list and trying to knock everything off beforehand. But as soon as I held the kid, I was like, oh, crap. This is, okay, we're in this. This is real, real. Mm-hmm. And it changes everything. It changes your perspective. It changes your priorities. Like, all your friends you have maybe are so used to, like, let's go out. Let's get a drink. Let's go to this game or play, like, intramural sports, etc. Get together for poker. You can't do any of that anymore. You're now burdensome to their lifestyles. And so you end up losing a lot of friends because you're just not aligned anymore. And I think a lot of guys don't know how to deal with that. They just end up in a space where they're just, you know, looking for someone else who understand what they're going through. So I think having fatherhood communities is so key, so that they can at least have someone who will understand where they're coming from. You know, we've been trained to suffer in silence emotionally as men already. And as dads, when you're in one of the most stressful situations in your life, having to do that on top of it, it's not a good idea. And so I look forward to, you know, having more conversations, more communities where dads can just be honest about it. There's one I'm actually part of right now called the Dad Cave, where we are trying to, you know, hit those emotional cores and get us to a point where we can just have honest conversations. And it's going to be an uphill battle, but I think more men will see value and stuff like that as time goes on.
Mm-hmm. I love that people are just talking openly about fatherhood, because I feel like my parents' generation, I don't think they ever did. Right?
Ooh! Oh, that's a grenade. Yo, don't even. My mental health was not a thing. It was like, yo, just stuff. I'm writing a book right now called Black Dad Matters.
Oh, awesome.
As part of it, like, I go deep into my family tree. Like, I'm the genealogist of the family. So for Sarah's side, as a Dutch background, it's easy for her, where she's like, you know, I've gone back 23 generations in her family to like the late 1290s, because there's just records.
Yes.
Whereas, you know, with Jamaican culture, like, as the descendants of slaves in many cases and everything like that, like, you don't have the same degree of records, but, you know, you can find stuff if you dig hard enough. And so, for example, I realized that when my dad's parents got together, my grandmother was like about 26 at the time she had him, whereas my grandfather was like 45 and already had a whole gang of other kids and everything, and really wasn't interested in being a dad anymore by that point. Mm. And so I look at that, and then I look at my dad, and then they look at me, and I'm just kind of like, man, there's a lot we had to kind of work through. And the entire idea of like this entire kind of messed up dynamic is something that therapy would have been amazing. It would have.
Oh, yes.
It wasn't on the table, yeah, but it would have been amazing. Mm-hmm. And this is what I'm seeing as the generations going on, making sure that now we can start to identify these issues and actually deal with them, rather than just be like, it's just how it works. This is, yeah, we just accept this blindly. This is great. Everything's fine.
It's so true. I feel like our generation, we're all about therapy, and we're talking about like intergenerational trauma, like what you just mentioned. Mm-hmm. We're like, it's like we're delving in deep because we need to find out about this stuff, right? So, yeah. Yeah. Ooh.
Yeah. So you guys see my kids in school, now they have like emotional zones and circles where they have to like be in touch with their feelings. I'm like, this child is like 4 years old. You want them to be in like their color zone based on their feelings. I'm like, okay, they're going to be far better adjusted than I am as a human being when they become an adult.
Absolutely. That's awesome. So they say that setbacks don't equate failure. Mm-hmm. What's one failure you've had to overcome?
I saw a saying, what was it? Like the other day, I saw someone post up something that said, a failure is only final when you quit. Mm. And I agree with that. I feel like there's been a number of things that I have, you know, missteps I've made over time, even with the brand, like even last year. So you've had Kaya on the show before, and she's become like a little sister to me. And I was having a conversation with her about, I think last summer I left something like 10 grand on the table in brand deals, just because the kids have been home for 6 months straight from school due to COVID. And I hit Father's Day. It was the busiest Father's Day I ever had, and it was amazing. And then I just mentally shut down. Like, I was just done. I got to the second half of 2021, a shell of myself. I spent all of our family vacations, and I still had things I was supposed to do. I spent all of the summer just recovering and trying to get back, my step back. And I'd say that, you know, I felt that 2021, the end of it was just like this huge setback where I just could have done so much more, but didn't have it in me. And then 2022 has just been more like, you know what? Done is better than perfect. I started just getting things done, and I was like, I can take these ideas or whatever I have to do and put it out in the format it's in with, you know, you make it presentable. But you get it out to a point where it's like, I'm ready to put this out into the world. And so that's what brought on the Black Canadian Creative Directory. It was just at a point where I'm like, okay, this is functional. Like, let's get it out and grow after that. Mm-hmm. And it did super well. Or, you know, I have other things that I have just like started to put out for posts or ideas or truths I want to put out onto social media. And each time is literally like, I've had this sitting on my desktop or in the folder for ages and ages. Let's just put it out and see what happens. And over again, like, it's growing. Like, 2022 is growing exponentially in just opportunities that are far more substantial, like tangible. They're more grown up and real, right? Before, it's kind of like you have opportunities to maybe do a little bit here, do a little bit there. You're kind of like messing around with stuff. And now it's more like, oh, no, we want you to represent this thing because we see how honest you're being on this topic. Or your post on this really helped me out. Like, I have post emails that come in from people who've felt uplifted and has like actually improved their lives because I chose to talk on something that no one chooses to talk on. And so I'm like, I'm starting to take it a lot, not more seriously, but I feel like I've grown up a lot in the last couple of years and it's helping. So yeah, I think there's been a huge setback with just personal health and well-being for a bit there, but now I'm back and I'm doing it in a way that's hopefully as measured as possible.
That's great. But I think also with COVID, I think we've all been traumatized by it. As long as, you know, we're doing our 9-to-5, we're, you know, we're living life. At some point, it's like, wait a second. Been in this for a while now, and, you know, now it hits you, right? So I think it's hit people at different stages of COVID. So it's it's interesting.
Yeah, I'd be told to be kinder to myself because COVID did knock us all back, knock us all down a few rungs on the ladder. So I'm just like, I'm learning. I'm getting there. I have to say, I feel like I'm being a lot better about things now that I'm like, I am one person and I'm starting to pair up with lots of other people to get projects done or move things forward. But at the same time, I'm like, I am one person and the life I'm living is like the life of three. So it's cool if I don't like win every day. That's all right. I just have to get used to it.
Yeah, exactly. So who inspires you?
I don't know. It's a weird question because there's a lot of people who I look up to. You know, I mentioned Kea before. She's someone who I see as, is it weird to say I see her as a younger version of me in female form? Yeah, let's go with that. Sure. Cool. So like, she's someone I put a lot of like my time and energy into because I just want her to win, right? And my dad is someone I look up to, but that took a long time to get there. Like in the first like 25, 30 years of my life, I would not give you that answer. I would have been like, we don't get along like that. That's not us. That's not how we do. But then, you know, after having kids myself and understanding what it takes to raise kids and sacrifices you have to make, decisions you have to make, I appreciate my dad a lot more because he was someone who wasn't really around much because he had to work a ton. He ran a restaurant. And so he would work 12 to 16 hour days, 5 to 6 days a week. And it took a long time for me to realize that's not by choice. That's something he had to do to make sure we could get all the things we need. And after that clicked, I was like, oh, so like the degree of sacrifice from both my parents really needed to in order to make sure that we turned out all right. Like that was so important and key. And, you know, I find mentors, I find people along the way who I really work with them, work well with them on a mental, spiritual level. And it's a short list of people who I really vibe with and I want to go to on a regular basis. I feel like I try my best to make sure those people know who they are. I try to show appreciation on a regular basis and at least check in every now and then to let them know I'm still alive and kicking and things are still okay. But I do find that the older I get, that the smaller that circle becomes, right? Like it's like maybe like 5, 10, 15 people who I'm just kind of like, hey, let's like hang out. Hey, let's talk about something. Hey, let's go over what's going on in life and things like that. But I feel like the people who inspire me are the ones I'm constantly just talking with things about. We grow together and it works well to be able to, you know, have a space where I can just be honest about, you know, whether it's a situation I'm going through, a project I'm working in, something I'm struggling with. And getting other perspectives that help me figure out, oh, I need to do X, Y, and Z to get to the next part of this. So, yeah, it's just a very roundabout and indirect answer, but that's the one I'm sticking with.
I love it. And I think COVID has made people realize who's in their circle. And that you realize that, you know, maybe you had like, you know, 50, 100 like acquaintances and all of a sudden you're like, all I need is really like four people. You know, you just need that four good core of people and then you're good. So I like that.
Yep. My acquaintances will see me on the socials at this point. I'm like, I know you, but.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, Casey, this was fun. Thank you for being here. I cannot wait to read your book. So good luck with the writing process.
Thank you. You and me both, because it's taken a lot out of me to write this thing. So when it's actually in a book form, I'll be like, okay, thank God.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's fun.
That was such a great conversation I had with Casey.
One thing I took away from this conversation is that it's so important to create a community of dads. I hope you found this conversation insightful just as much as I did. Don't forget to share this episode with a friend, leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts, and please subscribe. Follow me on Instagram at introverted_queenblog. Thank you so much for tuning in. Take good care, and until next time.